Hello, a very good morning to you. I want to begin this morning with the report by several government agencies on the River Blackwater fish kill. It was published during the week and it was inconclusive. Not enough evidence to say who or what was to blame for the largest fish kill in Irish history. I've talked to a lot of scientists in the river ecology world since that kill in early August. And I think it's fair to say that there is a consensus among them that the investigation into the next kill and the one after that and the one after that will also be inconclusive if things are left as they are. So what has to change about what is getting into our rivers, how they are monitored, how polluters should be dealt with, and how the responsible agencies are resourced? I spent some time in a riverbank this week with Alan Sullivan. Over a long career as a consultant ecologist, he has investigated fish kills in a number of jurisdictions and has a pretty good idea about what best practice is.
Yeah, we were part of a sort of a rapid response team in Devon and Cornwall, Somerset, but mostly Devon. Okay.
So you've seen best of practice, worst of practice?
Absolutely. I mean, it was the National Rivers Authority.
Alan was getting changed into wet gear on the side of a road in Wicklow when I met him.
We did Ballinglen up here. This is one of the last pieces.
His job that day was surveying a weir with a view to installing a fish pass for migrating salmon.
We have to ask ourselves why we've arrived here. This is not something that arrived here in the last number of years. This has been 50, 60, 70 years in the making.
With decades of experience under his belt, Alan argues it is vital not just to look at the pollution being put into a river, but what we have done to change the shape, the size and the speed of that river too.
It really started off with the Arterial Drainage Act. The morphology of the river as we've done through drainage, they become linear, they become almost flat. If I take the River Nore, in the 1970s, 25 mils of rain, 1 inch of rain, it would have taken the river 3 to 4 days to rise, 3 to 4 days to come down. So you had this constant, steady flow because of all the sponges, the bogs, the wetlands, the manner in which water was attenuated naturally and slowly came back into the river. It kept the river's height up. The solution to pollution, as we keep saying, is dilution. So when you have a river flowing at those kind of rates, the inputs that come into it are much more tolerable by the ecosystem. Okay. Now what we have is everywhere has been drained. The water hits the ground. It runs off really fast. The river gets a massive flood, a big spike, and then it's straight back down to nearly what we would call drought conditions.
So where there used to be a slow rise and fall of the volume of water in rivers, there is now a very rapid, quick rise, a torrent, and then back to near drought conditions.
Correct.
And if the solution to pollution is dilution, well, those are not rivers that have enough water in them to do that job of dilution.
Correct. And everything is acute.
So are we asking rivers to do a job that they could have done in the 40s, 50s and 60s, but in the modern context, they're no longer able to perform?
Correct.
To what extent is there an additional stressor in temperatures? We've just had the warmest summer on record and particularly warm nights.
Well, there's a correlation between the temperature of the water and the amount of oxygen that the water can hold. As the temperature goes up, the amount of oxygen the water can hold goes down. Fish are now living in an environment where it's chronic stress all the time, month after month after month. And we say this is the hottest year. Next year will be the hottest year. And the year after that will be the hottest year. This is not going backwards. So the stressors that I'm talking about are everywhere. We are seeing them everywhere. We're seeing them in Donegal. We are seeing them in Mayo. We're seeing them in Cork, here, Dublin. Every river we are in.
So are you telling me that these rivers are now operating in the normal course of events at or just below a threshold in which life is possible, but add in a pollution event and you tip over?
I couldn't have said it better. In its most simple form, that is where we're at, and we are seeing it everywhere. Everywhere we go, we are watching freshwater ecosystems literally clinging on. Literally.
So are you telling me that events like what happened in the Blackwater is something that we can expect to see much more frequently?
Without a doubt. We know this is coming, so we need to be prepared. We would like to see a dedicated rapid response team. We would like to see these incidents treated as if they were a murder scene. We would like to know that there's a 24-hour call line that will respond, because these things don't happen from 9 to 5, they happen all the time.
When the Blackwater fish kill happened, the pollution may have entered the water as much as 3 days before anybody spotted dead fish. To have the best chance at identifying what chemical killed a fish and where it came from, the fish need to be examined as they are dying, not once they're dead. For that, we need technology in our rivers providing information on pollution in real time.
So down here, this is where your kind of detection happens, and that'll separate both nitrate and nitrite.
Nitrite is dissolved ammonia, isn't it?
It kind of is. When you look at the...
There is an Irish company based in Carlow selling exactly that technology all around Europe right now. But bizarrely, there is little or no demand for their tech in Ireland.
If you get either ammonia or nitrite, you're probably going to suffer a mortality event with fish.
There's nothing prototype about this. You're not in beta mode here at all. This is operational and ready to go now this morning, standing here on the side of this river.
100%. They're across Scandinavia in aquaculture farms where people are really looking at water quality as it relates to fish.
And have you happy customers?
Absolutely, yeah. So we recently got a...
Colm Lynch, the CEO of Aqua Monitrix, showed me their kit.
Kingfish King in New Zealand as a thank you for how good our analyzer is.
And how often will it send you data points?
We can run a sample every 15 minutes. It takes 15 minutes to complete a full cycle.
Okay. So in the case of the River Blackwater fish kill, you would have been in a position to say after 15 minutes, hang on, we've detected something untoward in the water.
Yeah, the analyzer will pick it up. It'll give you an early warning system. You can set limits in here so you can get an SMS to your phone or to your email to say, we've got a spike in something. So take an action.
Could a piece of technology like this be used as part of a traffic light system or a stop-go system?
Yeah, so let's say I agreed with you a milligram per litre concentration of nitrate or nitrite, and you said, at that level, I want to make sure there's nothing, no nitrogen load added to the river. So we hit that mark and you get an SMS to say, stop discharging.
If I was a polluter, I was discharging to a river and I wanted you to monitor it for me, and I was to ask you for a monitor upstream and a monitor downstream and then a monitor at the point that I'm discharging, and I want you to maintain them and I want you to send the data to both me and the EPA, give me a bill for that for the year.
Ballpark, you're probably talking at maybe about 4,000 to 5,000 euros per analyzer, so you're looking at a cost between 12,000 and 15,000 euros.
And is there an economy of scale? The more monitors that I have, the less that you would charge me, or do you have to charge me 5 grand a monitor?
Everything's an economy of scale. The more we sell, absolutely the better we can do.
Either way, this is something that is in the tens of thousands a year, not the hundreds of thousands
absolutely
for a company.
Absolutely not, no.
Colm Lynch from Aqua Monitrix. I'm joined in studio by two people who probably know more than any others on the island about what needs to be done to restore river health. Professor Mary Burke from Trinity College Geography Department, and also on the line by Professor Fiona Regan, Director of the Water Institute in DCU. Mary's area of expertise is slowing the flow of rivers, and Fiona's is pollution. Two issues that just keep on coming up again and again. Good morning to both of you. Can I start, please, with the same question for both of you? Fiona, you first, because there might be people out there scratching their heads wondering, what does all of this matter? What does it matter, Fiona, if a river dies beyond a few anglers not being able to catch their brown trout?
Good morning, and what a great start, I suppose, for people to understand or to hear what I think maybe is It means if a river dies. A river is really the lifeblood. It's the life support system of our ecosystem. You know, it's lovely to walk by. It's good for well-being, of course, and for anglers, as you say, but it is the lifeblood of the ecosystem. If a river dies, everything collapses. Rivers are habitat corridors. You know, they're like green blue highways for connecting between forests and grasslands and wetlands for migrating bees and birds and butterflies and so on. They're really, really important in terms of maintaining biodiversity. But of course, we know as well in Ireland, rivers are a source of our drinking water. So it's really important for a whole range of different reasons to maintain them.
All life flows from the water, Mary.
All life flows from the water, and it's really important to understand everything is connected along rivers as well, people and habitats, right from the very source of the river right down to the ocean. So what happens anywhere along a river will affect everywhere else along that river.
Fiona, have you any thoughts on whether a tech-led traffic light stop-go system like the one that we just heard Colm Lynch demonstrating there would work for discharging waste to rivers or not?
Yeah, absolutely it would. It happens already in industries that they have these this technology to alert if something goes wrong. This is not new, but we don't do it typically for discharges from companies or from businesses into waterways. You know, it certainly would give that green light scenario, that traffic light scenario that you mentioned, and anything that we can do to improve what's happening at this point would be really important to implement. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what's missing at the moment is the idea that climate change changes how we view, you know, our river flows. This was a lovely to listen to at the start of the program, actually, to know that these flows are being impacted by climate change. And so we need to monitor, because the discharges that are licensed currently may not be those levels that can be discharged under this changing climate.
Mary, this is your area of expertise now. Our rainfall patterns are changing, so the flows in our rivers are changing, and the heat in our rivers is changing.
Absolutely. So our winter flows are increasing. Our chances of floods are increasing. Our summer flows are decreasing. And our chances of droughts are also increasing with that. So Fiona's absolutely right in terms of overall the extremes are becoming more impactful on our regime.
Okay, so meaning from May to September, no matter how well regulated and monitored a river is, there could be short periods in which the flow goes very, very low.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. When you read, Fiona, this 100-page report that was just published on Thursday night, there's a timeline that emerges from it that is worth noting. Just bear with me while I go through it, please. This pollutant enters the water possibly on the 5th, maybe on the 6th of August, and it's not noticed by a member of the public until the 9th of August. Inland Fisheries, the responsible agency, finds out on the 11th of August. That's like 6 days after the pollutant has gone in. And they contact the Marine Institute straight away to conduct sampling. 3 days later, the Marine Institute takes its first samples on the 14th of August. A week after that, on the 21st of August, those results are found to be inconclusive and they realise that they're going to have to go and get an external laboratory who are able to conduct a greater range of tests. But it's not until 8 days after that, on the 29th of August, that samples are delivered to this private lab. So 24 days elapsed between the pollutant entering the river and a lab that had the capacity to run the full range of tests actually receiving samples to run those tests. So my question is, Professor Regan, in your opinion, are these agencies properly resourced to do their jobs?
Well, even listening there to the list of agencies and in relation to those dates is really interesting. This is an area that we term a special area of conservation or special protection area. And for that reason, it needs to be protected. But if you have so many agencies involved, it's very difficult to coordinate. And the earlier, again, the piece that you played, the gentleman referred to the need for a rapid response team. And so the delays that you describe are really worrying. But I think part of that is, it's not that any one agency isn't doing their job. I think the report is quite thorough. It is inconclusive, but I've read each of the results and, you know, they've done what they should do. It's the time that's the challenge. And, you know, in my view, this was like a heart attack on that river. And as that gentleman said, we need a rapid response. We need people out there within a matter of hours, and the technology would help alert us. But we need coordination. I mean, so many in a special area of conservation, we have lots of them around Ireland. We need coordination. And this can happen again if we don't have that rapid response, you know, that ambulance service to be able to respond immediately when something like this happens. So, yeah, I mean, it's shockingly long. But I think in terms of the resources, I think it's more than resources. I think it's actually coordination is the challenge.
Mary Burke, are these agencies properly resourced in your view?
No. And I'd also like to say that the way our rivers are managed in Ireland differs from other jurisdictions in Europe. If you look at the UK, you've got one agency that minds both the hydrological regime, and what I mean by that is the floods and the droughts, and another one, and it also manages the water quality issues. In Ireland, we've got two separate agencies managing both of those problems. We need to have this integrated catchment management where rivers are taken as a unit and there's one head organisation responsible for managing all of the interconnected aspects of that, which all influence each other.
Fiona, I got a technical briefing from three officials at the EPA yesterday on their element of this report, and they showed me the data, which showed that at the time of the fish kill, nobody was breaking the rules. Everybody was in compliance, and I accept completely the accuracy of the EPA's analysis on that. But if everybody is compliant with the rules and 32,000 fish are still killed, is there a problem with the rules?
Well, in relation to the rules on I suppose, license and monitoring and regulation, there is a problem in terms of how we respond in, you know, dealing with people who are polluting. So in that case, yes, because the fines are so small and so really there's no, I suppose, reason for those potential polluters to stop doing that. You know, the rules are there. They do set discharge licenses. But if you look at the flows that are reported in this report, we have seen very low flows.
When you say flows,
you
mean the volume of water in the river at that time?
Yes, exactly. They have reported that volume and how that has changed over the course of July and August. And the response in the report says that the low flow really does not reduce the capacity of rivers to deal with the licensed discharges. But we don't know if this was a licensed discharge. You know, we assume this was a pollution incident. And because of the drought at that time, you know, we are seeing the rivers not being able to respond in the normal ways. So in that sense, yes, perhaps those laws are not meeting the requirements of, you know, the changing climate that is changing everything, really.
Mary Burke, this raises the possibility that there was one of two things at work here. Either a complete cowboy dumped a huge amount of a pollutant into the river, which killed more fish than has ever happened at any point in Irish history, but no trace can be found by any of the scientists of what it was that was dumped. Or it means, as Fiona is suggesting, that in the context of changed weather, changed rainfall, hotter nights, that the rules are no longer fit for purpose in 2025.
I would agree with both of those. And I think that they're going to continue to happen. We're going to have the cowboys and we're going to have the discharges into rivers that can't cope with that discharge. So what we need is a more agile system. So you've already spoken about how the agencies need to be funded better, maybe to have more of a rapid response to getting out to address these. We have the technology now. This is fantastic. And we need to invest in this. We need to enable local communities to be able to run these and report them in. This 24-hour hotline is absolutely fantastic. But our change in climate is rapid. And also within that, the changes of the weather are rapid as well. So we need to have a more dynamic and agile system of people who respond, but also of knowledge to respond to.
And physical changes to our rivers as well. I mean, to reduce the temperature, should we be planting trees, the trees that we removed from all of those riverbanks?
Yes. So one of the main effective ways in which the fish population can survive better and cope better with these increasing temperatures is a bit of shade. And it's not complicated. Mm. And we're not talking about riparian forests everywhere. We're just talking about pools and shade.
Final point to you, Fiona Regan. If we are talking tens of thousands rather than hundreds of thousands to put in static point monitoring like column lynches, do you think that it is reasonable to ask those people who are discharging wastewater to the rivers to pay that bill?
Absolutely. I mean, if part of a license should be that you're monitoring and you're reporting breaches to that license. Absolutely. And, you know, many businesses have these technologies to make sure that they're not polluting, because it means that it damages their business.
Many, but not all.
So many, but not all. Absolutely. And, you know, This is the onus of this is on the business. You know, if they're allowed to discharge into these really valuable resources, these beautiful, you know, lifelines within our country, they have to respect that. And it needs to be within those licenses that they use technologies.
Professor Fiona Regan from DCU's Water Institute and Professor Mary Burke from Trinity College's Geography Department, thank you both very much for joining us this morning.